Chapter 6. People who preach. Ministers offer themselves willingly. Focus of chapter. The king raises up an army of preachers. Paragraphs 1 and 2. Question. What great work did Jesus foretell? And what important question arises? Political rulers often make promises that go unfulfilled. Even those with the best of intentions may be unable to carry out their promises. In refreshing contrast, the Messianic King, Jesus Christ, always proves true to his word. After he became king in 1914, Jesus was ready to fulfill a prophecy he had made some 1,900 years earlier. Shortly before he died, Jesus foretold, "This good news of the kingdom will be preached in all the inhabited earth." Matthew 24:14. The fulfillment of those words would be part of the sign of his presence in kingdom power. However, an important question arises. How would the king be able to raise up an army of willing preachers in the last days, a time period that would be marked by a selfish, loveless, and irreligious spirit? We need to know. For the answer to that question involves all true Christians. Paragraph 3. Question. What confidence did Jesus express, and where did he get such confidence? Look again at Jesus' prophetic words. Do the words, "will be preached," express confidence? Indeed they do. Jesus was sure that he would have willing supporters in the last days. Where did he get such confidence? He learned it from his Father. In his pre-human existence, Jesus observed firsthand that Jehovah has confidence in the willing spirit of his worshipers. Let us see how Jehovah expressed that confidence. Your people will offer themselves willingly. Paragraph 4. Question. What work did Jehovah invite the Israelites to support, and how did they respond? Recall what happened when Jehovah directed Moses to construct the tabernacle, or tent, that was to be the center of worship for the nation of Israel. Jehovah, through Moses, invited all the people to support the work. Moses told them, "Let everyone with a willing heart bring a contribution for Jehovah." The result? The people continued to bring voluntary offerings morning after morning. They brought so much that they had to be restrained from bringing in anything else. Exodus 35:5 and 36:3-6. The Israelites lived up to the confidence that Jehovah had placed in them. Paragraphs 5 and 6. Question. According to Psalm 110:1-3, what spirit did Jehovah and thus Jesus expect to find among true worshipers in the time of the end? Did Jehovah expect to find such a willing spirit among his worshipers in the last days? Yes. More than 1,000 years before Jesus was born on earth, Jehovah inspired David to write about the time when the Messiah would begin to rule. Psalm 110:1-3 reads, "Jehovah declared to my Lord, 'Sit at my right hand until I place your enemies as a stool for your feet.' Jehovah will extend the scepter of your power out of Zion, saying, 'Go subduing in the midst of your enemies.' Your people will offer themselves willingly on the day of your military force. In splendid holiness, from the womb of the dawn, you have your company of young men just like dewdrops." Jesus, the newly installed king, would have enemies who would oppose him. Yet he would also have an army of supporters. They would not have to be forced into serving the king. Even the young among them would offer themselves freely, becoming a multitude so great that they could aptly be compared to the countless dewdrops that blanket the ground in the morning sun. The footnote reads, "In the Bible, dew is associated with abundance." End of footnote. Jesus knew that the prophecy recorded in Psalm 110 applied to him. Hence, he had every reason to be confident that he would have loyal supporters who would offer themselves willingly to preach the good news in all the earth. What do the historical facts show? Has the king in fact raised up an army of willing preachers in these last days? My privilege and duty is to announce that message. Paragraph 7. Question. After he was installed as king, what steps did Jesus take to prepare his supporters for the work ahead? Shortly after he was installed as king, Jesus took steps to prepare his followers for the vast work to be done. As we saw in chapter 2, he did an inspection and a cleansing work from 1914 to early 1919. Then, in 1919, he appointed the faithful slave to take the lead among his followers. Especially from that time onward, that slave began dispensing spiritual food by means of convention discourses and printed publications that repeatedly emphasized the responsibility of all Christians to have a personal share in preaching. Paragraphs 8 through 10. Question. How did conventions give impetus to the preaching work? Give an example. Convention discourses. Eager for direction, the Bible students gathered at Cedar Point, Ohio, USA, from September 1st to 8th, 1919, for their first major convention following World War I. On the second day, Brother Rutherford gave a discourse in which he pointedly told the delegates, "A Christian's mission on earth is to proclaim the message of the Lord's kingdom." The climax of that convention came 3 days later when Brother Rutherford delivered the talk entitled Address to Co-Laborers, which was published in the Watchtower under the title Announcing the Kingdom. He stated, "In sober moments, a Christian naturally asks himself, why am I on the earth? And the answer of necessity must be, the Lord has graciously made me his ambassador to bear the divine message of reconciliation to the world, and my privilege and duty is to announce that message." In that historic discourse, Brother Rutherford announced that a new magazine, The Golden Age, now called Awake, would be published for use in directing people to the kingdom as mankind's only hope. He then asked how many of those in the audience wanted to have a share in distributing this journal. A report on the convention explained, "The response was an inspiring scene. 6,000 people, as one person, arose." The footnote reads, "The pamphlet to whom the work is entrusted explained, the Golden Age work is a house-to-house canvas with the kingdom message. In addition to the canvas, a copy of the Golden Age is to be left at each home, whether a subscription is taken or not. For years thereafter, the brothers were encouraged to offer people subscriptions to the Golden Age as well as to the Watchtower. Beginning February 1, 1940, Jehovah's people were encouraged to distribute individual copies of the magazines and to report the number placed." End of footnote. Clearly, the king had willing supporters who were eager to proclaim his kingdom. The following is supplementary information. Early conventions that gave impetus to the preaching work. 1919, Cedar Point, Ohio, USA. The program highlighted that a Christian's vocation was to announce the incoming glorious kingdom of Messiah. An announcement was made that a new magazine, The Golden Age, would be published for use in directing people to the kingdom. To organize and give impetus to the work, a service director would be appointed for each class or congregation of Bible students. 1922, Cedar Point, Ohio. During the discourse entitled The Kingdom, the speaker urged, "Advertise, advertise, advertise the King and His Kingdom." One of those present, Anna E. Zimmerman, later recalled, "Our mission was now loud and clear, to advertise the king and the kingdom, and we went forth from that convention and did just that." 1931, Columbus, Ohio. The Bible students adopted a new name, Jehovah's Witnesses. That name clearly identified the responsibility of those who worship Jehovah, namely, to proclaim his name and kingdom. 1935, Washington, D.C. The great multitude, or great crowd, was identified as consisting of individuals who have the prospect of living forever on earth. With their understanding thus clarified, Jehovah's people discerned that the scope of the preaching work before them was indeed great. Returning to the chapter, paragraphs 11 and 12. Question: what did the watchtower in 1920 say as to when the work that Jesus foretold would be done? Printed publications. Through the pages of the watchtower, the significance of the work Jesus foretold, namely, the preaching of the good news of the kingdom, became clearer and clearer. Consider some examples from the early 1920s. What message would be proclaimed in fulfillment of Matthew 24:14? When would that work be done? The July 1, 1920 issue of the Watchtower, in the article entitled Gospel of the Kingdom, explained the message, stating, "The good news here is concerning the end of the old order of things and the establishment of Messiah's kingdom." The article clearly showed when this message would be preached, saying, "This message must be delivered between the time of the Great World War, World War I, and the time of the Great Tribulation." Hence, the article noted, "Now is the time to proclaim far and wide in Christendom this good news." Paragraph 13. Question: how did the Watchtower in 1921 appeal to the willing spirit of anointed Christians? Would God's people be pressured into doing the work that Jesus foretold? No. The article, Be of Good Courage, in the March 15, 1921 issue of the Watchtower, appealed to the willing spirit of anointed Christians. Each one was encouraged to ask himself, "Is it not my greatest privilege, as well as my duty, to participate in this work?" The article went on to say, "We feel assured that when you do see it as a privilege to share in the work, you will be like Jeremiah, in whose heart the word of the Lord was as a burning fire shut up in his bones, urging him on so that he could not refrain from speaking." Jeremiah 20, verse 9. That warm encouragement reflected the confidence that Jehovah and Jesus have in loyal kingdom supporters. Paragraphs 14 and 15. Question: in 1922, the Watchtower urged anointed Christians to reach others in what way? How should true Christians reach others with the kingdom message? The short but powerful article entitled Service Essential in the August 15, 1922 issue of the Watchtower urged anointed Christians to take part in actively carrying the printed message to the people and talking to them at their doors, giving the witness that the kingdom of heaven is at hand. Clearly, from 1919 on, Christ has used his faithful and discreet slave to emphasize repeatedly that a Christian's privilege and duty on earth is to proclaim the kingdom message. How, though, did the early Bible students respond to the encouragement to share in the work of kingdom proclamation? The faithful will be volunteers. Paragraph 16. Question: how did some of the elected elders react to the idea that all should share in the ministry? In the 1920s and 1930s, some resisted the idea that all anointed Christians should share in the ministry. The November 1st, 1927 Watchtower explained what was happening. "There are those today in the church or congregation occupying the responsible position of elder who refuse to encourage their brethren to have part in the service, and who refuse to participate in the service themselves. They scoff at the suggestion of going from door to door to carry the message of God, his King, and his kingdom to the people." The article pointedly said, "The time has come for the faithful to mark such and to avoid them, and to say to them that no longer will we entrust such men with the office of eldership." The footnote reads, "At that time, elders were elected democratically by the congregation. Therefore, a congregation could refuse to vote for men who were opposed to the ministry." The change to theocratic appointment of elders will be discussed in Chapter 12. End of footnote. Paragraphs 17 and 18. Question: How did most in the congregations respond to the direction from headquarters, and how have millions responded over the past 100 years? Happily, most in the congregations responded enthusiastically to the direction from headquarters. They counted it a privilege to share the kingdom message. The Watchtower, March 15, 1926, put it this way: "The faithful will be volunteers to tell this message to the people." Such faithful ones lived up to the prophetic words found at Psalm 110:3 and proved themselves to be willing supporters of the Messianic King. Over the past 100 years, millions have offered themselves willingly to carry out the work of kingdom proclamation. In the next few chapters, we will discuss how they have preached, the methods and the tools they have used, and what the results have been. First, though, let us discuss why millions have shared in this kingdom preaching work voluntarily, despite living in a me-first world. As we consider why, we do well to ask ourselves, why do I share the good news with others? Keep seeking first the kingdom. Paragraph 19. Question: why do we heed Jesus' counsel to keep seeking first the kingdom? Jesus counseled his followers to keep seeking first the kingdom. Matthew 6:33. Why do we heed that counsel? Basically, because we recognize the importance of the kingdom, that it is central to God's purpose. As we saw in the preceding chapter, the Holy Spirit has gradually revealed thrilling truths about the kingdom. When precious kingdom truth touches our heart, we feel impelled to seek first that kingdom. Paragraph 20. Question: how does Jesus' illustration of the hidden treasure show how his followers would respond to the counsel to keep seeking first the kingdom? Jesus knew how his followers would respond to the counsel to keep seeking first the kingdom. Consider his illustration of the hidden treasure. Matthew 13:44 reads, "The kingdom of the heavens is like a treasure hidden in the field that a man found and hid, and because of his joy, he goes and sells everything he has and buys that field." In the course of his daily work, the field laborer in the illustration happens to find a hidden treasure and immediately recognizes its value. What does he do? Because of his joy, he goes and sells everything he has and buys that field. What is the lesson for us? When we find kingdom truth and recognize its value, we will joyfully make whatever sacrifices are needed so that we may keep kingdom interests where they belong, first in our life. The footnote reads, "Jesus made a similar point in his illustration of a traveling merchant who goes out in search of a pearl of high value. When the merchant finds it, he sells everything he has and buys it." The two parables also teach us that we may learn of kingdom truth in different ways. Some stumble upon it, so to speak. Others search for it. But no matter how we find the truth, we are willing to make sacrifices in order to put the kingdom first in our life. End of footnote. Paragraphs 21 and 22. Question: how do loyal kingdom supporters show that they are seeking first the kingdom? Give an example. Loyal kingdom supporters show by deeds, not mere words, that they are seeking first the kingdom. They devote their lives, their abilities, and their resources to the kingdom preaching work. Many have made great sacrifices in order to pursue the full-time ministry. All such willing preachers have seen firsthand that Jehovah blesses those who put the kingdom first. Consider an example from the early days. Avery and Lavinia Bristow served together as coal porters, or pioneers, in the southern United States starting in the late 1920s. Years later, Lavinia recalled, "Avery and I have had many happy years together in the pioneer work since then. There have been many times when we did not know where the money for gasoline or groceries would come from. But one way or another, Jehovah always provided. We just kept on keeping on. We always had what we actually needed. Lavinia remembered one occasion when they were serving in Pensacola, Florida, and were low on money and groceries. They came home to their trailer and found two large bags of groceries, along with a note that read, "With love from the Pensacola Company." The footnote reads, "Congregations were then called companies." End of footnote. Reflecting on her decades in the full-time ministry, Lavinia said, "Jehovah never forsakes us. He never betrays the trust we put in him." Paragraph 23. Question. How do you feel about the kingdom truth that you have found? And what are you determined to do? We cannot all do the same amount of preaching. Our circumstances vary. However, all of us can count it a privilege to declare the good news whole-souled. Because we prize the precious kingdom truth we have found, we are willing, yes, eager, to make whatever sacrifices we can in order to serve to the fullest extent possible. Is that not your determination? Paragraph 24. Question. What is one of the kingdom's greatest accomplishments in the last days? Over the past century, the king has indeed been fulfilling his prophetic words recorded at Matthew 24:14. And he has done so without using coercion. After coming out of this self-centered world, his followers have willingly offered themselves to preach. Their earthwide preaching of the good news is part of the sign of Jesus' presence and kingdom power, and one of the kingdom's greatest accomplishments in the last days. How real is the kingdom to you? Why was Jesus confident that he would have willing supporters in the last days? How has the faithful and discreet slave emphasized the responsibility of all to have a personal share in preaching? How do you feel about the kingdom truth you have found? And how can you show that you are seeking first the kingdom?